I don't get it. Are you saying that Pinker is alive somehow, and he just jumps in and out of people like a goddamn crab or something?
I know it sounds crazy, but that's exactly what he's doing. Maybe he's using electricity or something because of the way he died. I don't know. All I do know is that I saw him do it 5 times today.
Well, then let's go just grab the fucker then.
And break his neck. I'd love to break his neck.
You can't do it that directly, Rhino. You'd be killing whoever it is that he's inside of. That's the whole point.
Then why don't you just do like you said you did with this cop? I mean, you can outrun anybody Pinker gets into, and then when they're out of energy, Pinker's just forced out. Then we'll break his neck.
Junk Food Dinner, episode 57. This week, we welcome special guest host Jeremy Morrison to discuss 3 often overlooked Wes Craven films. Up first, a killer put to death by electric chair comes back to life to get revenge in Shocker from 1989. Then things go bad quickly when a young whiz kid implants the brain of a robot into the body of his recently deceased neighbor in 1986's Deadly Friend. And finally, a scientist trying to create a new species combining plant and human DNA accidentally transforms himself in Swamp Thing from 1982.
Well, whatever.
Welcome to Junk Food Dinner, episode 57. This is the podcast where each week we scour the internet, video stores, and cable television, looking for the most outrageous and interesting cult films. We're not professional film journalists or critics by any means. We are simply 3 geeks from Ohio with entirely too much time on our hands. In Ohio, I am Kevin Moss, and I'm joined by my co-hosts Mark Fredo in New York and Parker Bowman in California, and our special guest host this evening, Jeremy Morrison. Every week, we'll each bring a cult favorite to the table, recalling our personal experiences with the film, discussing its merits, and arguing why we did or did not enjoy it. This week, we'll be taking a look at 3 overlooked Wes Craven flicks from the 80s, Shocker from 1989, Deadly Friend from 1986, and finally Swamp Thing from 1982. But first, gentlemen, how you doing this week?
Doing pretty good.
I'm not so bad.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, thanks for being here, Jeremy. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I am currently in Ohio as well. I'm in the Dayton area. I'm also a DIY filmmaker who tries to make shitty movies for no money, pretty much.
Nice. What kind of stuff do you make?
Well, the kind of stuff that I'm doing right now, I just launched a production company with my fiance Faith Mon Awesome, who has been on the show before.
Yeah.
And my friend Chris up in Chicago. We've created this little universe called Hollyworm Productions, where first we're going to start off doing shorts, kind of throwing them together for anthology type discs, and then branching off into features. I'm kind of taking the old school, you know, DIY punk rock attitude to where, like, you know, I'm justifying the shorts as my 7 inches, and then we will expand from there.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. So if people are looking for some of your stuff, is there anywhere online where we can get more info?
Right now we are on Twitter, www.twitter.com/Hollyworm Production Prod. And then an underscore, however the fuck you'd say that. And Faith is actually creating a website right now for us, so that info will be released through Twitter.
Cool, and then I'm sure we'll post it up on our website as well. So yeah, keep your eyes open for that.
Yeah, are you still looking for the lead of your new project on Twitter?
We actually are. That was a kind of really dumb idea that I had that hasn't really panned out, but we've had a couple submissions. Unfortunately, they're the wrong sex.
So. That doesn't help.
No, it doesn't. I need to, whenever I post these contests and stuff, I need to be more clear on what I need, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, if you've got a good makeup department, then it doesn't matter.
Right. Or there CGI.
Yeah. Or just CGI them up, yeah.
I would love to CGI some chicks into dudes right now, but that's not in the budget, unfortunately. Oh, shit, I forgot to mention that. Fuck, Parker, did you know, or were you following the Hollyworm production page whenever we announced that Adam Rifkin's producing our first short?
Oh, no, I didn't even see that.
Yeah, he's coming on board as a producer.
Sounds good. Nice. So yeah, how are you guys doing?
Pretty good.
Yeah, I'm doing all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing super exciting going on, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm glad to have you on, Jeremy, to talk about these Wes Craven films. I went and saw Scream 4 this week. Have you guys had a chance to see that yet?
Yeah, I saw it too.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah, I caught it as the second feature at the drive-in. I saw Source Code, which I actually thought was really good.
That looked pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's Duncan Jones who did Moon, which I really liked, and he's David Bowie's kid. And it's pretty cool. It reminded me a lot of Moon, where it was a guy kind of in a, you know, situation that he can't control, and he learns more about like what exactly is going on as it goes on. But I thought it was really cool. It reminded me kind of like, I described it as like Bourne Identity meets Groundhog Day. But yeah, I thought it was good. So I'd definitely check that out. But what'd you guys think of Scream 4?
Well, I've been on Twitter and Facebook speaking very vehemently about how I think it's like the worst movie ever. I think it's just awful, awful stuff. I was very sad. As you know, I was very optimistic. Like, we'd talk about it on the nerd news and stuff, and you guys would kind of sigh, and I'd be like, oh, I can't wait for this Scream! But that didn't pan out the way I wanted it to.
Yeah. Hey, I was right there with you, though. Like, it crushed my soul inside a little bit. Because I will defend Wes Craven to the grave. Like, he's the reason why I picked up a camera in the first place. But there's no defending Scream 4. There just isn't. Like, Scream 3 isn't even a good defense for Scream 4.
Yeah. It's kind of sad that, like, the movie that you made that has Jay and Silent Bob in it previous to this is the better one.
It's Connie Chung.
I popped into that grocery store that I steal bootlegs from sometimes, but they didn't have one, so I have not seen Scream 4.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty terrible, but, you know, it was pretty much exactly what I was expecting, which, I mean, like, had I not seen this movie and just imagined what it was like, it would be exactly like what Scream 4 actually was, which I think is probably one of the worst things you can say about a movie, but...
Well, couldn't you chalk that up to you just having a shitty imagination?
I would say I have a pretty awesome imagination. It's making Wes Craven a bunch of money. But yeah, no, I mean, it's exactly what you think it is, much like the tagline for Pieces. But yeah, I don't know. I'd say you could probably skip it.
Why don't you just spoil the ending for everybody?
It's very self-referential.
Yeah.
That's the ending.
I like it.
Is Wes Craven the killer?
Yeah. No, I won't spoil the ending for anybody, because I'm sure there's people that are going to check it out. And if you can't see the ending coming, you are an idiot anyway. So.
Yeah, I'd say if you don't have it by the end of the first reel, you should just die.
Coincidentally.
Unfortunately.
That's the whole plot of Scream 5, so.
All right, so let's get into some nerd news.
From the global resources of Junk Food Dinner Worldwide, it's time for Nerd News.
All right, so the first piece of nerd news that I have, so Arnold Schwarzenegger is coming back into films, and everyone's kind of, you know, been speculating, what's he going to do? Is he going to do some action stuff? Is he going to, you know, fight aliens? What's he going to be doing? Well, not so much. He's going to be starring in a movie called Cry Macho, which is penned by late playwright N. Richard Nash, and is by the director of The Lincoln Lawyer, Brad Furman. So this is kind of like an Oscar bait kind of movie, which is kind of weird. I guess, you know, after being governor, he doesn't want to fight Sinbad over a doll anymore. But it's kind of sad to see that maybe the end of the Arnold Schwarzenegger action era is over. So, yeah, what did you guys, have you guys heard this news? And if so, what are your thoughts?
No, I don't know what he's going to do. I mean, I wouldn't assume that he would do anything good either way, even if he was going to be like right. in Terminator what, 5? Like, that's not going to be good after the last two. But I am really going to miss him. When I went to go get my new California ID, there's this huge picture of him on the wall at the DMV, And I was like, man, this is fucking awesome. This is the best part about living in California. And now that's over, too. So, I don't know. Right. That's all I care about for Arnold Schwarzenegger, is whether or not his picture's on the places I go to in California.
Right. Yeah, it would have been nice. I don't know. I'm kind of sad to think that we've seen the last filmed Arnold Schwarzenegger scream. Because he had one of the greatest screams in all of movie history. He won't be telling anyone to. He won't be screaming at anyone to, you know, get to a chopper or come with me if you want to live.
Damn it.
So, but I'll be interested to see him like try to take on a serious role though, because that could also be equally as unintentionally hilarious if he is in fact, you know, trying to cry manly tears. So speaking of people from the 80s,
that's not
really fair. Sam Raimi is going to direct a new Wyatt Earp and Jesse James movie. Director Sam Raimi of Evil Dead and recently Spider-Man fame has signed to produce and direct a film adaptation of Earp, Saints for Sinners, based on the Radical Publishing miniseries created by Matt Cyrilnik and David Manperl. So yeah, this looks pretty interesting. It's kind of in a world where the American economy has all but collapsed to the levels of the Great Depression. Infamous bandits roam the country, and the law is as corrupt as the criminals. So it's kind of like a post-apocalyptic, or like on the brink of apocalyptic thing with, you know, kind of a Wild West feel to it. So I don't know. I think that could be pretty cool. I'm glad to see Sam Raimi doing, you know, non-franchise stuff. And yeah, we'll see how this turns out.
Is he doing that the same time he's doing that Wizard of Oz movie?
I don't know. He's a busy man. Yeah, I've never read this miniseries that this is based off of. It's, you know, like a graphic novel kind of thing. But I saw some pictures of it online. It looked pretty cool.
So long as Justin Long's not in it, I'll be on board with this.
Is he what ruined Drag Me to Hell for you?
Yeah, that and, like, the script.
Ouch.
Dang.
I like Drag Me to Hell.
I did too.
I guess.
No, I mean, it's flawed, yeah, but come on.
Well, speaking of flawed movies, it looks like Gary Busey is being brought into Piranha 3DD, the sequel to my favorite movie of last year, Piranha 3D. And, yeah, if there was any doubt that Piranha 3DD would be twice as stupid as its predecessor, here comes further proof. Busey is the film is actually already in production, but I guess they needed to spice it up, so they brought a little Busey into it. they're not going to have some of the quote-unquote big-name actors like they did last time, like Adam Scott and Elizabeth Shue. This time they're going to have like comedian David Koechner and Daniel Panabaker.
I don't know who any of those people are.
David Koechner, he's an Anchorman. He's kind of like, and he's on The Office sometimes. As
okay.
He's the bald dude, you know.
Yeah. I just didn't know his name.
He's that guy who's not Rob Corddry. Right.
Well played, sir.
But yeah, so Gary Busey's gonna come in there and liven it up a little bit, and probably get murdered by a piranha. And if the title is any indication, there's probably gonna be a lot of tits in 3D. So. Needless to say, I will be seeing this film.
I will also be seeing this film, but I will probably be disappointed. Like every other movie I've seen in the last 5 years.
Ever
or so.
Seen?
Yeah. Every other movie that we talk about, like on the Nerd News segment of this show, I'm going to be wholeheartedly optimistic for and then let down by.
Well, I didn't see the first one, so I fear that I won't be able to follow along. So I'm going to have to see the first one before I try to see that.
Well, Parker, here's a ray of hope for you in the upcoming movie field. It looks like Dwayne The Rock Johnson is going to star as country music.
In a movie about your life!
I would be very optimistic for that.
No, he's going to be starring in a movie about country musician Charlie Pride's life, playing the iconic singer. At first I thought this sounded ridiculous, but I watched a bunch of videos of The Rock singing. And playing acoustic guitar, which apparently he does very often, which I was totally unaware of. And I could actually see him pulling this off.
Yeah, yeah.
The new Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's... I'll watch anything with The Rock in it. I like him. He's just so charismatic.
He is. I gotta admit, I was smitten when I saw him playing that guitar. I want to go on a man date with him now.
What, I mean, was he playing like Counting Crows songs? Was he playing like
I just saw
original rock ballads?
No, I saw a clip of him playing "You Send Me" by Sam Cooke on the Tonight Show.
Oh man,
yeah, it was charming.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It'll be cool to see The Rock doing something other than babysitting 4-year-olds or blowing up cars, and see just how far he can stretch his acting chops. But if nothing else, if it's totally horrendous, it'll at least be a hilarious watch.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'll give him credit until we see how it turns out.
I say I look forward to Parker picking that on the show.
Yeah.
And the last piece of nerd news I had this week is Mike Tyson's tattoo artist is suing Warner Brothers to stop the release of Hangover 2. Apparently, one of the plot points in the movie is that Ed Helms' character wakes up with a similar looking tattoo of that of the iconic Mike Tyson face tattoo. And S. Victor Whitmill, the tattoo artist, calls the design one of the most distinctive tattoos in the nation and is asking for an injunction to stop the release of the highly anticipated comedy sequel. So I don't know. I don't know if he's got a shot in hell of getting this stopped.
Yeah.
But he might make a little money off it. But nevertheless.
Well, I mean, he is the guy that invented shitty tribal tattoos, so.
Yeah.
I'm sure he has some sort of stake in this.
Right, yeah, I don't know how you can copyright something like that, but apparently he's going to try.
Yeah.
So good luck, S. Victor Whitmill.
Yeah, now I know what your name is. Hope I can impress someone while we're watching Jeopardy sometime.
All right, well, let's get into some of the cool stuff on DVD and Blu-ray this week. The first release is The Green Hornet from 2011, directed by Michel Gondry and starring Seth Rogen and Jay Chou. I wasn't compelled enough to see this in the theaters, and by all accounts, I heard it was pretty terrible. Nevertheless, the fact that Michel Gondry directed it, and the fact that, you know, Seth Rogen seems like a legitimate fanboy for the source material, and so I'm sure he did his best putting a little love into it. But that being said, I don't know. I don't know how excited I am about this, but now that it's out on home video, I might check it out. I mean, it does have Christoph Waltz and Cameron Diaz.
What I hate Cameron Diaz. What was the horrible song that was in the trailer?
I have no idea.
Oh, wasn't it like that Coolio song or something?
Yeah, it was like Gangster's Paradise or something. Yeah, I really wanted this to be really exciting and fun and Michel Gondry, you know, whimsical and stuff. But I heard nothing but bad things. But I'm probably still going to see it.
Yeah.
I honestly forgot that movie was ever made.
A couple other interesting Blu-rays coming out this week. We've got a couple Blu-ray horror 2-packs. We've got The Man Who Cheated Death, or I'm sorry, The Man Who Could Cheat Death and The Skull. These are two older films. Peter Cushing is in The Skull along with Patrick Weimark. And I don't know. These look pretty cool. And then the other one is Student Bodies and Jekyll and Hyde Together Again. These are two horror comedies. Have you ever seen Student Bodies? I'm pretty excited about this. I haven't seen it since I was a kid, but it was kind of like the precursor to the Scary movies. It was like a goofy airplane-style comedy, but like set as a slasher movie.
No, that sounds all right.
Yeah, I don't know. I loved it as a kid, but it's probably one of these ones where if I rewatched it now, it would.
I don't know. It's been on Showtime for the past like 2 months, and I watch it every time it's on. It still holds up, in my opinion.
Okay, awesome. You sold me.
I'm so glad. You're gonna come back with hate mail, you fucking douche. Wasted time on Student Bodies again, you fucking ass. We can curse, right?
Yeah.
Oh no,
but believe
this
me,
this is going on the internet.
Touche.
We also got From Dusk Till Dawn making its Blu-ray debut this week. I was a big fan of that movie. I love it when Quentin Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez try to out nerd each other. Usually has good results.
That's true.
Also this week, we've got two weird combinations of people versus vampires. We've got Ninjas versus Vampires from 2010, starring Jay Saunders and Daniel Ross, and Bonnie and Clyde versus Dracula from 2008. Now, these are two totally separate releases from two totally separate companies coming out on the same day. So, people who like odd people fighting vampires, this is your week to buy some DVDs.
Well, I'm into that Bonnie and Clyde one because Tiffany Shepis is in it.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
That's my big sis. We got to represent that.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to see that movie.
Yeah, and Trent's the bomb, too, from his Troma days. So, Trent Haga, for those of you that do not know who Trent is.
Yeah.
That would be Clyde in this movie.
Awesome. All right. Well, there you go. Another endorsement. So, if you're listening, if you're keeping score at home, Jeremy says check out Student Bodies and Bonnie and Clyde versus Dracula.
I would also like to point out, though, that I am a huge whore. And I will say lots of very nice things about lots of very not good movies.
Fair enough. All right, so we are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to jump right into our Wes Craven triple feature with Shocker from 1989, so stick around.
Tired of only hearing your junk food dinner hosts talk to you? You want to start talking to them? Then pick up your Zach Morris-like cellular phone and dial 347-746-JUNK. That's 347-746-5865. Leave us a message about the movies we've talked about. Did we give a good review to a movie you think sucks? Did we take a crap on your favorite movie? Let us know. Or call in to suggest a movie, or tell us why you hate LeBron James. Remember to leave a name and the city you represent when you call. We're very lonely and rarely hear the voices of other humans.
So dial this number now if you dare. Tell them Reddit sent you.
To the execution of Horace Pinker, whose unspeakable atrocities have horrified the people of this great state. He stands convicted of 52 counts of aggravated assault, 23 counts of armed robbery, and 37 counts of murder in the first degree. Prisoner, have any final words?
Yeah. No more Mr. Nice Guy.
I don't think he's dead.
Content. He's among you.
Now, Wes Craven brings you his greatest creation.
No more!
Shocker.
Welcome back to Junk Food Dinner. Up next, Jeremy is going to talk about Shocker from 1989.
All right, yeah. So Shocker, my all-time favorite Wes Craven film, is the story of Horace Pinker and Jonathan Parker. Jonathan Parker is a, I guess you'd say, junior college football standout wide receiver. And he lives quite a normal life up until the day that he finds out that I'm going through puberty. My voice just cracked like that. I do apologize. he finds out that his stepfamily are slain by this vicious psychopath, Horace Pinker. And the two of them have this sort of history, I guess you could call it, and you get the sense that they're telekinetically synced up like an iPhone to iTunes somehow. And shit hits the fan. Jonathan Parker has to kind of use his telekinesis to find out where Horace Pinker is going to strike next. With the help of his stepfather, who is also a police chief. And through one of Jonathan Parker's really crazy dreams, he finds out where Horace is going to be. He leads the cops to him. And after a semi-not very good fight scene, the police capture Horace Pinker, sending him to die life in prison, right? Or the death row in prison. Upon his day of death, I guess you would say, the day that he's going to the electric chair, he connects to a broken down TV and somehow sells his soul to the devil. In exchange, he gets to come back as electricity. I guess that's the best way to put it. He can morph through Lazy Boys and jump channels and on your television set and make lights go in and out. But also, he has the ability to jump bodies. So if you're shocked by an electrical outlet, you are now Horace Pinker. And somehow, unexplainably, if that person touches another person, the soul of Horace Pinker is transferred that way too, which doesn't really make sense because I thought he was electricity, but I guess it's sort of, you know, what was that Denzel Washington movie?
Oh, Fallen.
Fallen, yeah. It's a precursor to Fallen in some way that, you know, he can touch you and transfer souls. And so now Jonathan knows that Horace Pinker is back from the dead to continue his slaying spree. But nobody believes him. Everybody thinks he's batshit crazy because people don't come back from the dead unless you're in a Wes Craven movie. And stuff goes down from there, you know. Am I allowed to spoil it or have I said too much?
Yeah, no, I think that's good. We usually try to leave the endings like off just in case, you know, someone wants to go check it out. But yeah.
Unless we really want to make fun of the endings. Then,
yeah, exactly.
Then we spoil them.
Well, Shocker is a great ending to make fun of because it makes no sense. but I'll leave that up to you guys to decide, I guess. Right?
Yeah. Where did you first see Shocker? Like, did you see it in the theaters or when it hit?
No, Shocker came out when I was 4. So I caught it at a mom and pop video store long time ago, probably around 96 was the first time I seen Shocker.
Yeah, and this does have one of like the most iconic box arts of any video ever. Like if you say the name of this movie, chances are if you walked into a video store between the, you know, 1990 to 2000, you saw this cover and it stuck with you for some reason. Like I've mentioned this movie to any, like I was telling a lot of people that I was watching this movie for the show and almost everyone I talked to said, oh, I remember the box, but I don't know if I ever saw that movie.
Actually, that's kind of what kept Shocker in my mind. When I was a kid and it just came out in 89, the poster scared the shit out of me for some reason. It just was too much for my fragile little 4-year-old mind to to comprehend. And then, you know, a couple years later, I seen the box art, and I was like, holy shit, that's the poster that scared me. I need to get it. And so I rented it, and I realized that it's not scary. It's actually more of a black comedy, and, you know, that kind of stuff I could get down with as a nine-year-old child. So yeah. I watched a lot of movies, probably like you guys did, you know, way before you should have. So
Yeah, when I was a youngster, I watched this, I think, once or half of it. Like, maybe I caught some of it on TV or something. And it didn't really sit well with me. And so I haven't watched it until this weekend since then. But this was always kind of my go-to thing. Like, it always seemed to me, like, because, you know, the guy in Shocker was so jokey, it always seemed like this was Wes Craven trying to make a Freddy sequel, like, on his own terms. Like, it seemed like Wes Craven was sitting alone in his basement, and he was like, hey, if everybody's going to, you know, turn my scary Freddy into this jokey pop culture guy, I'm going to try to do that too. And, I mean, it sort of works. Like, when I was watching it this time, I was like, man, you know, this is just going to be a Freddy ripoff, and I'm not going to care for it. And then when I saw, like, sort of near the beginning, Pinker kills a cop, and then the cop's face is, like, this, like, funniest, like, death face ever. Like, it's like the most anguish and fear on a face. And I was like, oh, okay, all right, this is going to be all right now. I can tell by this guy's face that if I don't take this movie seriously and I stop thinking about Freddy, then I'll probably be able to enjoy it. And then that's the case. You know, like, once I let go of all my anger and fear coming from Freddy and being such a big Freddy fan, then this became enjoyable.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, though, because whenever Wes Craven sat down to write Shocker, he was optioned to write it through Universal, and Universal said, give us a Freddy. And that's exactly what he was trying to do. You know, he was gypped in the early years by Bob Shea on the Freddy franchise, and so when Universal said, hey, we want a franchise, copy what you did for Freddy, but this time, you know, you have free control, you're not going to have anybody involved in the production, it's completely your baby, and we will give you all sequel rights. Unfortunately, because he took that route for, you know, a quick paycheck, no sequels came about it because the film bombed. So
yeah, I think he forgot that, like, what makes Freddy so cool when he eventually got funny and campy was the fact that he started out scary, and
yeah,
this Shocker fellow just starts out kind of, I'm going to bite your fingers and say it's finger licking good. Look how cute I am. Which I like on its own terms, but I the fact that it's coming from Wes Craven, I'm like, oh, come on. Just leave Freddy alone.
I agree with you there, yes. But I will still defend it.
Understandable. But yeah, I mean, it's fun, though. Like, it's, you know, like I said, if you don't take it seriously at all, I had a lot of fun with it. And there's a lot of cool effects. Like, there's a scene where his name's Pinker, right? Not Pinkerton. I'm thinking about Weezer.
Yeah, Pinker.
There's this part where Weezer shows up and they play the entire Pinkerton out. Now he comes in through a hanging from the ceiling light, and that I was like, oh my god, that's like the coolest looking thing from this movie from 1989. And there's a lot of other cool visuals. There's a really bloody bathroom that was like the most bloody bathroom I have ever seen, and I enjoyed that.
Yeah,
I hadn't seen this movie since it had originally come out on video. I remember, again, that iconic box just drew me to it immediately, and I rented it sometime in the early 90s, shortly after it had gotten home video release. And I hadn't seen it since. It wasn't one that, for whatever reason, I wasn't compelled to revisit. But watching it again this weekend, I did enjoy it quite a bit, actually more than I was expecting to. I also like the goofiness kind of it. I mean, it actually does kind of start off fairly straight, albeit fairly reminiscent of A Nightmare on Elm Street in some ways, with the whole dream aspect, you know, where what's the kid's name? Where Jonathan is, you know, he's seeing the kills, the murders before they happen in his dreams, and there was some special effects that reminded me a little bit of what was in Nightmare on Elm Street. But as it went on, and it did, like, the last half hour of the movie, or maybe the last 20 minutes, it does get really goofy where they're, you know, going through the TV and stuff and going through all the different channels. Like, that feels, like, really goofy and, like, really uncharacteristic of the movie. But nevertheless, it was enjoyable for me as somebody who likes kind of weird left turns and kind of campy kind of stuff. And so that was fun when it got to that point. But at almost 2 hours long, it did feel like it was a bit too much. Like, I feel like there's stuff that could have been cut out as Jonathan kind of tries to pursue Pinker. But, you know, nevertheless, I thought it was an entertaining watch. It just dragged a little bit in the middle for me. I also, you know, I thought the performances in it were pretty good. It's got the guy that plays Jonathan, Peter Berg. I remember him most, unfortunately, from The Great White Hype. I don't know if you guys have ever seen that movie.
Same here, yeah.
He's kind of like a bootleg Dennis Quaid. And I don't know, he does a pretty good job in this. I did like Camille Cooper as Allison. We talked about her a little bit when we did The Applegates. And I always enjoy seeing her on screen. But overall, you know, this was a good movie. And, of course, Mitch...
Mitch Pileggi.
Pileggi, yeah, from The X-Files.
Yeah.
As Horace Pinker. Which, and I think, all goofiness aside, he did have a pretty, you know, strong presence as... I think he made a good supernatural villain in a Wes Craven movie. So, all in all, I thought it was a fun watch, and I was glad that I came back and watched it.
I, like you, saw this a while ago. I did not see it when it first came out. I remember seeing it somewhere in middle school. I mean, it had been a while, but that cover, you know, that cover is so iconic that it was something that I had at least been seeing for a while. But yeah, I hadn't seen this in a really long time. Like you, it did feel a little long at points. But I think there's a cool cast, you know, Cammy Cooper, Ted Raimi, Mitch Pileggi. I like all those people. What's his name? He's the reporter, or the news guy. Oh, John Tesh.
Oh yeah, John Tesh.
Hilarious. So, I don't know, there's parts of this that I like, but overall, it's just like, it's kind of baffling to me. That Wes Craven has had as long of a career as he has. not that I think that this is bad or anything, but I think that a big problem that Wes Craven has is ending his films. Generally, they're the worst endings of all time. And we'll get to that a little later. But for the most part, I like this movie. It was fun to kind of revisit it. And... like I said, I like a lot of the people in it, but it's not one that I'm just going to throw on all the time or anything.
See, I am ashamed to admit that I watch this film like once a week. I love Shocker so much. I have, like, you know, a Shocker shrine in my house. Yet, I mean, it's such a bad movie, but I love it. It's weird.
No, I can see the appeal of it. I can see how it has... It could have that cult appeal because, you know, I don't know. When I was watching the end of this movie, it was like such a pick-me-up after, like I said, it kind of dragged a little bit in the middle. And then when it gets to like the sheer weirdness at the end where they're going through the channels, they're coming through people's TVs, they're fighting like on John Tesh's desk. And it's just like so such a left turn. But like you get like kind of amped up when it happens. You're like, all right, like this is kind of the payoff. Yeah.
Yeah, and I can get behind that. I certainly am not opposed to crazy weirdness, but when it's just like it feels like it's, oh shit, we have to end this. Let's just make it super weird and crazy.
Yeah, I kind of feel like maybe what Wes Craven was trying to do is, like, for the first half or so, Horace is like real scary. Like he kills people in like these brutal fashions and calls you an asshole while he's doing it and stuff. And then from there, like, once he gets, like, these weird powers, everything becomes crazy. And I think he was, to bring it back to this again, like, trying to do a Freddy thing where, you know, like, the further things are going along, the crazier and more they're not going to make sense and the goofier they're going to be. Like, not so much because he didn't know how to end it, just because he was trying to make a Freddy and wanted to skip ahead to the goofy shit before part four, before Shocker part four.
Right. Yeah, it would be interesting to see what would have come had this become a franchise, like if it would have progressively gotten worse and goofier and if it would have just become a joke. But guys, I don't know. I think that would have been interesting to see.
Give me 10 years. I will do a Shocker sequel. Give me 10 years.
All right.
Or not. I don't know.
This is recorded now. This is recorded and going on the internet. So
I did everyone, challenge in 10 years, on.
Everybody is going to be expecting this.
I'm going to shoot it on my iPhone. Like, horse peers in my fucking iPhone. Oh, no.
Well, you know, I think the inclusion of Timothy Leary as the televangelist might be a clue to Wes Craven's mindset when he was putting this movie together. Might have been doing some acid. And then Deadly Friend was his PCP movie. Yeah. Or his glue-sniffing movie.
I'd hate to know what Swamp Thing is. God. That's coked out. Let's do it! Movie.
Yeah, this movie also has a pretty hilarious, in retrospect, late 80s heavy metal soundtrack featuring Megadeth.
There's nothing hilarious about Megadeth. Unless, of course, you find awesome guitar work hilarious.
Well, yeah, they do a cover of No More Mr. Nice Guy, which is pretty cool in the titular shocker scene.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like that the theme song is by a band called The Dudes of Wrath.
That's the new name of this podcast.
I have the soundtrack on LP, CD, iTunes. I have it on every format. I even have it on cassette tape.
Wax and the cylinder.
Oh my god, Dudes of Wrath are like where it's at. 20
Dudes of Wrath
years ago.
Yeah, it's Paul Stanley
from Kiss, and Tommy Lee's on drums, and a bunch of other people that I can't remember their names of.
They're like the original Chickenfoot.
I actually read that Wes Craven blamed why this movie didn't do well on the fact that the movie studio made them have a heavy metal soundtrack. And I thought that the soundtrack was like one of the best parts of the movie as a Megadeth fan, but I guess Wes Craven does not like good guitar work and jazzy drum work.
Well, he was just upset because he couldn't use Charles Borstein for the 12th time or Harry Manfredini, who's going to give you the same score as Friday the 13th every single time. Wait, that's my Swamp Thing rant. I'll hold off.
Yeah,
on
you
that.
Save that up.
It's percolating.
Oh, also, to go back to this Freddy thing that I've been talking about, this movie starts with disembodied hands working at a workbench, which the first Freddy does. Also, this guy's coach gets murdered, which happens in the second Freddy. And there's a bunch of other stuff like that. You mentioned the dreams, and then the killer taking over bodies, which happened in the second Freddy movie. And also the protagonist in the slasher movie being male is also something taken from the second Freddy movie.
And you know what's so funny about that is Wes Craven hated the idea of a Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2 and absolutely hated what they did with Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2, and yet he rips off Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2 more than any of the other Nightmare on Elm Streets.
Yeah, yeah, it's very bizarre, I thought.
Yeah, I feel really bad for Jack Shoulder after all these years, you know? It's like, give us a gay Freddy movie, I'll take it. Now Wes Craven's going to bash it, but then years later he'll, you know, rip you off. So it ends well, I guess.
Yeah.
It's a give and take.
Definitely a lot of give.
But yeah, like you said, I think this would have been cool to see where sequels would have taken it, especially if they would have been all inside TV. Like if this would have been Stay Tuned with a slasher, like in future installments, I probably would have loved this.
Yeah, I can see that.
Oh, another thing that I thought was funny about this movie real quick is they capture Horace and then, you know, they're all, the state's going to fry him. We'll watch him. We'll go and see the execution and we'll get our revenge that way. And if this were real life, like they do this like a week later, if this were real life, it would have been 35 years later that they executed this man.
I thought the same thing when I was watching this.
I was hoping nobody was going to bring that up.
It's the most efficient state. Wherever they are, they're very efficient. No bureaucracy in that case.
I don't even think, does California have the death law anymore? I don't know.
I don't know.
It takes place in California, doesn't it?
I'm not sure.
Parker.
There was grass in this movie, so I'm willing to bet it's not California. I haven't seen one blade of grass since moving here.
I think it was Springwood, Ohio.
Why can't I find that on a map, guys? I've been living here for 4 years. What the fuck?
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back to talk about The Deadly Friend.
The Deadly Friend.
Deadly Friend.
Welcome back to Junk Food Dinner, episode 57. The next movie we're going to be taking a look at in our Wes Craven movie marathon is Deadly Friend from 1986. This is a movie that not too many people have heard of. In fact, when I mentioned it to most people, even those who are fairly familiar with the Wes Craven filmography, this is always one that sort of gets forgotten in time, and some would say for good reason. However, I first saw this movie back on VHS, you know, as most of these movies in the late 80s, early 90s. This movie is about a kid named Paul Conway who moves into a new town, and he's a brainiac, a whiz kid, if you will. He is he's in advanced classes. He's he's very smart for his age. So much so that he's invented a robot named BB that has artificial intelligence. And so being the nerdy kid that he is, he doesn't have many friends, although he does have he does team up with a nice gentleman named Tom Toomey, affectionately nicknamed Slime, played by Michael Charette. And his next door neighbor is Christy Swanson, playing a character named Samantha Pringle, who immediately Paul kind of forms a crush on. What he doesn't know is that Samantha's dad is an abusive one, and he's laying a beating on Christy Swanson every so often. So much so to the point where she starts to have like visible wounds and whatnot. But Samantha, Tom, and Paul all kind of form a friendship together. They all start hanging out and get into wacky misadventures with the robot. they piss off their cranky neighbor, Elvira Parker, played by Ann Ramsey of Goonies and Throw Mama from the Train fame. And but yeah, so one day, Samantha's dad goes a little overboard, throws her a beating, knocks her down the stairs, and actually kills her. This, of course, breaks the heart of the love-struck Paul, and he formulates a plan to steal her body from the morgue and implant the brain of his robot BB into Samantha's body, thus bringing her back to life, at least kind of. When the operation is successful and Samantha comes back, things seem like they're working out all right until things turn deadly, as the title would imply. This movie is Wes Craven at kind of his goofiest, I would say. This, you know, it kind of follows the same Wes Craven pattern that we're used to about teens put into a kind of weird supernatural situation that leads to death. However, this is rated R, it does feel like it has a decidedly more kid tone to it. I feel like this was kind of, as most Wes Craven movies are aimed at teenagers, but this feels maybe a little younger than that. It does feature some crazy, at least one crazy scene involving a basketball that it's probably the one reason why most people will talk about this movie, some 25 years later. But nevertheless, the inclusion of Christy Swanson and the great character actor Ann Ramsey and someone's head getting exploded with a basketball are enough for me to check this movie out every so often and enjoy it. So what did you guys think about Deadly Friend?
Okay, I'd never seen this movie. I never even heard of this movie. So when you picked it, I had to make sure that you knew who Wes Craven was. But it was me that did not know who Wes Craven was. I did not know this movie existed by any means. Until I saw the basketball scene. I was like, oh, there's that gif I see on the internet every once in a while. Cool. But, you know, I like movies about robots on occasion. And there was a robot in this, so I enjoyed that. That got me on board immediately. Why the kid built a robot and then gave it the voice of a monster, I have no idea.
A speak and spell, I think.
Man, I don't know. It sounded like a ghoulie to me. It was a frightening voice. And then when Christy Swanson gets turned into the robot, why she keeps that ghouly voice instead of having her own voice is also beyond me. I guess I don't know too much about robots, though. But Christy Swanson is cool in this, aside from her weird robotic acting, which I guess was supposed to be robotic, but it was like pretty robotic even for trying to be robotic. But yeah, it takes a long time for anything to happen in this movie, but when it does, things start getting pretty cool. Like, this kid has no qualms with accidentally murdering most people that he's come in contact with, and I like that about a character. there's a scene where the robot gets shot a couple times, and this kid, like, just freaks out and starts crying and wailing, and it's like the most intense and possibly realistic freak out I've ever seen of anybody watching a friend die in any horror movie ever. Like, I mean, he's got tears and snot running down his face and he's crying and it's pretty great. But like I said, this movie's pretty slow. It takes off pretty slow, but there's a lot of cool gore and wackiness at the end to make it worth it.
I agree. It is one of the unknown gems of Mr. Craven, but I think that just has to do with, you know, how it was his first real studio film, and he had so much input from other people for the first time in his career to where he really didn't know when to say yes and no to the suits. At least I've heard him use that as an excuse for the film, so I'm going to use it as an excuse for the film. another thing that kind of I feel bad about for the film is it was submitted to the MPAA 13 times, and each time they had an X until the last time, you know, they finally gave him an R rating, and
I think that's why the gore comes off as so cheesy and kind of slapsticky, just because the way that they had to just keep cutting the material, once you cut so much, it's never going to fit together properly, you know? So I think that's kind of an excuse that I'll give the film too.
Yeah, that was something when I was reading about Shocker, that film got an X and then they had to cut stuff out from that. And that movie isn't really that gory. Like, it, I mean, obviously, yeah. You know, they cut some stuff out, but I don't even see what they would have had to have cut out that would have been so gory, because that movie's not really like a gore fest. I think that the MPAA was just like, hey, you're Wes Craven, so we're going to fuck you over because of Freddy.
Yeah, he still gets that treatment, yeah. And they have an agenda, you know, against him since Last House on the Left, whenever he... Do you guys know that story? They couldn't get an R rating, so they just took an R rating off of another film and put it at the tail end of Last House on the Left and released it unrated. And they got into a lot of hot water, so I think he's been on the shit list ever since that.
I had a hard time believing this was even a movie when I was watching it. Like, it started off, and I was like, okay, like, I think I know what I'm prepared for. Like, Kevin had mentioned, you know, some key plot points and just kind of a basic rundown. So I was watching it, and it was going along. And the more that I watched it, the more it started to seem like a movie that they would talk about within another movie. just like something completely made up. This is, and we've watched a lot of dumb stuff on here. This is one of the dumbest things I have ever seen in my entire life. It like, Christy Swanson is gorgeous. I mean, that goes without saying. Anne Ramsey is always entertaining. I like robots. I like heads exploding. But this is, I mean, it's like unbelievable, unbelievably bad. The end of this movie is without a doubt like the perfect example of Wes Craven just being like, shit, do I have to end this? you know what? Yeah, fuck it. We'll just do this. I mean, it was baffling. I was like, I think I just, like, came out of my room shaking my head, and I, like, wasn't even able to, like, put into words to my roommates what was wrong. But it was just utterly unbelievable. The robot's voice, the fact that it's this, like, guttural monster sound, zero sense at all. And, yeah, how long was he living there? You know, how long was he living there that he, like, fell in love with this girl and that he's best friends with Slime?
Yeah, it all happens very quickly.
Yeah.
At least
everything
a week.
Escalates. Wait, yeah, a week. Extremely quickly. And they,
yeah.
for only having just moved in, they sure have a lot of stuff in the attic. yeah, this movie was just completely unbelievable. And I don't even know if I hated it. it's just like baffling to me. It seriously felt like something that, like, you know, in a TV show, it'd be like, you want to see Deadly Friend? And then you would see clips from it and be like, oh, that can't be a real movie. It is. So this is what I mean when I say I can't believe Wes Craven has had a career as long as he has because of stuff like this. And this was early. Nobody, like, nipped this guy in the butt. Nobody was like, oh, cool, like, you made, like, four good movies. Oh, Deadly Friend. Okay. I guess we'll put that out. But, yeah. So, I had never heard of this. I am never going to watch this again.
No, come on.
No, I'm not. I'm sorry. I will watch the GIF of Anne Ramsey's head exploding 1,000 times. But I will never watch this whole movie again.
Yeah.
Two quick points. The robot, who seems to be a very big hit on this show. Do you guys know who did his voice?
Wes Craven. I don't know.
No, it's Charles Fleischer, the voice of Roger Rabbit.
Oh, wow. That's, all he says is BB.
Yeah. Well, I have to deal with that. Every Tuesday night, I do a Ustream show with Brad Wyman, who you guys may or may not know. He produced Monster with Charlize Theron and Christina Ricci. His big thing now is Ustream TV shows, and Charles Fleischer does a weekly show for him that I have to sit in the peanut gallery and act like I'm a fan and cheer him on and stuff. And it's just more reason that I'm going to put a shotgun in my mouth.
But that guy was in Demon Knight. I would love to be in that peanut gallery. I'm such a big
fan. That's the thing. Like, I'm in the peanut gallery and he's talking about mole leads and stuff. And I'm like, you know, talk about Nightmare on Elm Street. You were Dr. King. Just ignored. I don't know why. Fuck those fuckers. Probably going to be fired. Thanks, Internet. I'm dumb. I'm letting it all out tonight, man. You guys are going to have to pick me up from a rehab clinic tomorrow.
Well, we'll record the next episode that you guest on from the rehab clinic.
Nice.
But yeah.
Go ahead. I was just saying my other point was the writer went on to write Jacob's Ladder, so I think that's pretty cool too.
That is staggering to me because Jacob's Ladder is fantastic. And this,
well, that's what I mean. Like, after this, he was allowed to write again, and he fucking puts out Jacob's Ladder. I mean, it's pretty tits.
Oh my god!
You're talking about Bruce Joel Rubin, the guy that wrote the screenplay.
Yeah.
Because interestingly enough, this movie is based on a book called Deadly Friend by Diana Henstal. And as weird as this movie is, I would be interested to see what the book is like, if it retains this kind of goofiness or if it's like dead serious. I don't know how it could be, but I don't know. It's 99 cents on Amazon. I might pick up a copy.
By chance, did any of you see the unrated Deadly Friend, or was it just the R-rated?
Yeah, I just got the R-rated DVD.
Probably just R-rated. Yeah, I watched it.
If you have a chance to see the unrated, like bootleg, anything, I don't care. Just you need to watch it for the baseball head explosion, because it goes on a lot longer, and the child wearing the getup loses it like halfway through, and so the Ann Ramsey dummy is actually hanging off of the child as the child's running into walls and stuff.
That sounds good.
The funniest thing I've ever seen. I pissed myself. I was laughing so hard.
Nice. I'll have to check that out.
Yes.
Excellent. All right. You guys got anything else on Deadly Friend? All right. Well, that just about wraps it up for Deadly Friend. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about our last film of the evening, Swamp Thing from 1982. So stick around.
Did you know that there are two ways to help out Junk Food Dinner? The first way involves sacrificing a goat or a human baby on an altar made of dragon bones. Or, next time you're on iTunes, you can leave us a 5-star review. You can write the comment that says everyone should listen to Junk Food Dinner. You can add as many exclamation points as you want. This will help more people find the show on iTunes. Recording each episode of Junk Food Dinner is the most physically and emotionally taxing activity known to man. It leaves us exhausted and bloody after the show. The least you can do is give us a good review.
This swamp, only one thing does. The Swamp Thing.
Uh-huh. Here comes trouble.
The Swamp Thing.
There goes the neighborhood.
Adrienne Barbeau and the Swamp Thing, an outrageous pair, in the incredible adventure that grows on you, or all over you. The Adventures of the Swamp Thing. The comic book legend lives.
Welcome back to Junk Food Dinner, episode 57. This is the last film of the evening, and we're ending with 1982's Swamp Thing. If you can believe it, this was a film written and directed by Wes Craven, starring a lot of cool people. Adrienne Barbeau, who I know mostly from Creepshow, and also in a movie I watched recently called Open House about a serial killer who targets real estate ladies. So, the story of Swamp Thing, the good doctor, Alec Holland, played by Ray Wise, a.k.a. Leland Palmer from Twin Peaks, has set up in the swamps of Louisiana trying to do science for the greater good. He is ambushed by the evil Dr. Arcane, who steals his formula and destroys his lab, kills his sister, tries to kill Adrienne Barbeau, and steals all of his experiments. In the scuffle, Dr. Holland is transformed into the ugly but lovable Swamp Thing. He then sets out to save Adrienne Barbeau from the evil Dr. Arcane and get his formula back, in the process killing a lot of cronies and losing an arm and swimming a lot, flipping boats, Swamp Thing stuff. This movie I have only seen a handful of times. I've only read a couple of comic books, the Alan Moore stuff. I love Bernie Wrightson, but it wasn't anything that I was ever super into, but I always really liked Swamp Thing. I always thought he was a cool guy. I like my monsters with a touch of tragedy. I always thought he was a cool character. This movie I had only seen a couple times before we did on the show. I used to have a DVD of it, but I had lost it at some point, so I was happy that it was on Instant Watch. I like this movie. I think it's pretty distinctively on Wes Craven, and that is not necessarily why I like it. In fact, I think when we were talking about this, there was a lot of like speculation as to whether he even had anything to do with this. But, I think this movie is cool. I think the makeup's cool. I think that Jude is one of the best supporting characters of all time. I love the end when there's, you know, the tiny Bruno and Swamp Thing and the pig monster fighting and stuff. I think it's cool. I like that they filmed it, you know, primarily in actual swamps and, this was just one that kind of stuck with me and that I liked. And I like Ray Wise. Yeah, there's just, you know, a lot of stuff that I find endearing about this movie. What did you guys think? The whole Swamp Thing.
Like most people, I think Swamp Thing has become a fairly iconic character in pop culture. I mean, the comic book was obviously very popular, the DC comic book. After this movie came out, it had a sequel in the late 80s, as well as a television series that it was primarily based off the movie. I mean, as well as the original source material as well. And then there was an animated TV show with the Swamp Thing. And so if you grew up in the late 80s, early 90s, you were kind of inundated with Swamp Thing. That being said, you know, I hadn't seen this in a long time. And watching this, I think primarily the Swamp Thing that I watched was actually the sequel, Return of Swamp Thing, was the movie that I watched most when I was a kid. I don't think I had seen this original one as many times as I saw that, and the aforementioned television series, which I watched quite a bit as a kid. So having seen those and having those be my primary Swamp Thing memories, I was amazed at how bad I thought the Swamp Thing suit looked in this one. I think it eventually got better in the TV show and the sequels, but this original one, I mean, it just looks like a big rubber green man suit. And I don't know, there's not a whole lot of like distinctive features about it. But nevertheless, this is a fun movie. You got Adrienne Barbeau with her, you know, big frizzy hair and her Hawaiian shirt, which at times I didn't know if Swamp Thing was saving Weird Al Yankovic or Adrienne Barbeau. You've got Wes Craven.
Weird Al would never show his tits like that.
Right. You've got Weird Al. I'm sorry. You've got Wes Craven staple David Hess as one of the villains in this, which is always fun. I do enjoy a good David Hess performance, and he's pretty over the top in this, as he usually is. Louis Jordan, who plays Dr. Arcane, the villain in this movie, he's really good, and he's really kind of hammy and over the top. He reminds me kind of like a Batman or a James Bond villain, which is coincidental because a year later he would play Prince Kamal Khan in Octopussy. So he definitely has the hammy villain to a T, and he definitely showcased it well in this movie. But, you know, that being said, this wasn't as good as I remember. I remember being pretty excited about this movie, and I almost picked it for the show a couple times myself just to revisit it. But it didn't hold up as well as I remembered it being. A lot of that may have been because I was primarily watching the sequel in the television series, and I don't recall this one as fondly with as much nostalgia. But nevertheless, it is a fun movie to watch, and if you're a fan of the comic book or the animated series, or if you haven't seen this, I'd say it's definitely worth checking out.
Yeah, I haven't seen this in years and years and years, and I'm not even sure if I've seen this one or if I'm just familiar with the TV show and the sequels and watched those as a kid. But this was fun. Like you said, David Hess is awesome. Like anything with him, I'm kind of sad that he didn't like cut open some boobs with a knife like he tends to do. that's really how I like my David Hess to perform. I mean, the suit looks pretty silly in this. Like that kind of detracts from the film. I thought just how insanely bad the suit was. Like, I mean, in like they close up on it a lot. And, like, it's sort of like Wes Craven was like, all right, I understand that this suit is bad, but I just don't give a fuck. Because there's a lot of, like, really well-lit scenes. Like, he hangs out in the day most of the time, the Swamp Thing. There's a lot of close-ups of, like, the hands and the face of Swamp Thing. So Wes Craven was just not trying to hide the fact that this suit looked stupid. I read in an interview that Wes Craven, the only creature effects that Wes Craven was happy with in the movie was that of the man bear pig at the end. And I thought that that was even more silly than the Swamp Thing. Like it's just it's just a pig mask and then like fur and scales. Like it's pretty bad looking.
Yeah. He looks like Grizzlor from Masters of the Universe.
Yeah. And, I, unlike Mark, I thought that Jude was just awful. I kept waiting for somebody to turn to him and be like, why are you in this movie? What do you have to do with the story at all? And he's sort of like, if you've ever seen National Lampoon's Loaded Weapon 1, he's sort of like the John Lovitz character, where he just keeps coming back for no reason, and he's just like, I just want to be in the movie. Just let me be in the movie. That's kind of what he does. Yeah.
Who was Jude?
He was the kid that ran the gas station.
Oh, yeah. Steve Urkel.
Yeah. My friend Jono.
Steve Urkel.
I thought it was funny that, or not funny, but kind of interesting that the Swamp Thing guy, you know, he's a scientist and he gets the crap on him and bursts into flame and then disappears into the swamp and then he comes back as Swamp Thing and he's sort of born via fire, just like Freddy and to a and to a lesser extent, Shocker, because the Shocker guy, because he also kind of bursts into flames and then disappears and then comes back as a monster. So I thought that was a interesting thing that Wes Craven keeps doing.
Yeah. Also, he does there. This does have one characteristically Wes Craven thing, as the ending just gets super weird.
Yeah,
that's true.
But yeah, I mean, this is all right. I mean, if you go into it acknowledging that you're not going to be watching, you know, The Dark Knight or Spider-Man, and you're watching, you know, a superhero movie made 30 years ago for no money, and there's going to be a lot of big rubber suits, then it's all right. Yeah, I don't know. It's all right.
Yeah, I agree with you on a lot of it, and I disagree with you on none of it. You know, they had $3 million. I mean, $3 million had to have been a lot by 1981 standards, right? I mean, buy a fucking suit that fits. You know? Like, it's all bunchy when he's walking, and I'm like, he has no ass crack. How does he shit? You know? I thought the rest of the cast.
Wait, are you saying you want to see Swamp Thing's ass crack? Is that what you're.
I totally just said that, yeah. I mean,
all right, we're just going for clarity on the show here.
Well, I he looks like a Ken doll that's painted green, you know.
So that's
and
good.
I want my Swamp Thing to, you know, have some junk in the trunk or something. I don't know what I'm trying to get at. Don't analyze it, because it's probably gonna turn out way gayer than it was meant to be. But yeah, I mean, and Pig Bear Man face, like there was no trying with the head. You know, the yeah. Eyes are very goldfish like and that they don't move, and no facial expressions. And Creepshow was 82, and that was like the standard, you know, for a long time on animatronic special effects, and Swamp Thing had no animatronic special effects.
Yeah, that man bear face just had a blank stare on his face the whole time.
Exactly.
In fact, I think that man bear pig mask might have been made by that shitty special effects guy from Grotesque we watched last week.
So one thing that I did notice, and I meant to look more into this, was that the sound effects credit on this, did you guys notice this? The sound effects credit on this movie was for Jay's Meats and Provisions Company.
I did see that.
So that intrigued me a great deal.
Yeah. Yeah, we should also say that, and Mark, get ready to throw your arms up in the air.
I already know what you're going to say.
they're planning on remaking this, produced by Joel Silver and directed by Vincenzo Natali, who did Cube.
And Splice.
Yeah. So,
I mean, that alone doesn't sound bad, but the clincher is it's 3D.
Well, of course. You didn't think they were going to do Swamp Thing and not put it in 3D, did you?
You're right. That's my fault for thinking.
Yeah.
That won't be any different.
The movie producers really want that newfound CGI ass crack to be really in the audience's faces.
Right.
And I will be there. What I don't understand, though, is why they're calling it a remake. I mean, yeah, it came out in 81, 82, and then they had the sequel and they had the TV show. But it's been so long that you could just make another Swamp Thing, you know. Don't call it a remake. Don't give it that reboot, you know, title. And I wouldn't not want to see it that way, you know.
Yeah, it's not like anybody calls, you know, the Tim Burton Batman a remake of the Adam West movie.
Exactly.
Has there been a Batman versus Swamp Thing?
I'm sure somewhere in the DC universe that has happened.
He hangs out.
But they're both good guys.
Yeah.
Give me 15 years, I will make this movie.
Riding high on the success of Shocker 2, and finally make Batman versus Swamp Thing. Good guy versus good guy. You guys got anything else on Swamp Thing?
Yeah. I'd like to mention the score, if I could.
Oh yeah, you were gonna do that.
Yeah, Harry Manfredini, love the work. The first time I heard it in The Children, Friday 13th got repetitive. Friday 13th Part 2 was getting a little tiresome. Swamp Thing, what the fuck? Why do the same thing four times in a row, you know? It's just, I'm sick of hearing those damn strings.
Yeah.
That's understandable. Yeah, this movie really could have benefited from Megadeth doing the soundtrack.
Or the Dudes of Wrath.
Yeah.
I would agree.
Yeah, there's one thing that I super, super really liked about this movie. Like two tiny little things, actually. But it made me like this movie a lot more. There's a scene where Swamp Thing kind of emerges from the swamp and punches David Hess and his cronies like in their boat. And then their boat flies up into the air.
That is amazing.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. And then there's another scene where he goes up to like their Jeep or truck or whatever it is and rips the hood off. And then the hood goes flying up into the air. And that was also amazing. I thought those two effects were super killer.
Yeah, agreed.
And on the flip side of the super killer effects, the arm growing back.
Yeah. I like his little baby arm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also agreed.
That baby arm was so cute with the little fingers.
It was. It kind of made up for not having an ass on the suit.
Right.
I'm just going to run that one into the ground, guys. Let's keep them coming.
Well, that just about wraps it up for Swamp Thing and episode 57. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to say goodbye to you and wave with our baby Swamp Thing arm.
JunkFoodDinner.com is the world's oldest and sexiest website. Go to JunkFoodDinner.com for the latest episodes of the show. We also have all of our past episodes. You will also find news about the show, movie news, trailers, funny stuff, and links to our friends. You can also leave us log comments, because that makes us happy. We hope our website will be a good way for you to spend time during the downtime in life, when celebrities are not going hilariously crazy, and when the Warcraft servers are down.
I can't do it. We'll do it live. We'll do it live! Do it live! I'll write it and we'll do it live! Fucking thing sucks!
All right, well, that just about wraps up episode number 57 of Junk Food Dinner. We'd like to thank everybody for tuning in and listening. We'd also like to thank Jeremy Morrison for coming on and guest hosting this week and bringing us this Wes Craven-themed episode. So thanks again, Jeremy, for being here.
Thank you for having me on. It was a pleasure, and I'm charmed. Thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you. And where can people hit you up on Twitter if they want to find out more about your films?
It's at Hollyworm, P-R-O-D underscore, and we'll be releasing news through there, every day. So.
Cool, and then keep your eyes open for the website coming soon. If you'd like to get in contact with us here at Junk Food Dinner, please feel free to send us an email at jfdpodcast@gmail.com or leave us a message on our voicemail line at 347-746-JUNK. That's 347-746-5865. Also, if you're online, check us out on one of your favorite social media sites, including Facebook, Twitter, and Blueberry. You can just find us under Junk Food Dinner. Become our friend, chat us up, and get updates about the show. Also, while you're online, check out our website, junkfooddinner.com. There you can find all of our past episodes, as well as the newest episodes whenever they're up, pieces of nerd news that we don't talk about on the show, links to all of our friends, and all kinds of good stuff. Also, there you can find links to subscribe to us on iTunes. Just click the banner, and you will have Junk Food Dinner delivered to your iTunes every week. Also, if you have a device like an Android and want to subscribe to us on things like Google Listen, you just simply copy our RSS feed and paste that into your favorite podcasting software, and we will be there for you every week talking about some crazy movies. Make sure you tune in next week. We're going to be talking about three rollerblade-themed movies, starting with Rollerblade from 1986. Then we're going to talk about Airborne from 1993 and Prayer of the Roller Boys from 1991. So make sure you can tune in for that. And until next time, this is Kevin Moss, Mark Fredo, Parker Bowman, and Jeremy Morrison for Junk Food Dinner saying adios, everybody. We'll see you next time.
somebody once, when I was first starting in films in New York, says, if you want something on your gravestone and you're in the film business, I think the best thing is filmmaker. If you can honestly say that, that's all you need to say. And that's, that I think would, I would like that on my gravestone, along with whatever you do, don't fall asleep.